following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
Back in 2014, I was having some strange symptoms physically, and so my doctor said, we need to run some tests. So one of the tests the doctor ordered was something called a stress test. And for those of you who've never had the pleasure, during a stress test, what they do is they hook you up to a bunch of monitors, and they have you walk on a treadmill. And you know, the treadmill starts out slow and level, and I remember as that started, thinking, man, this is not too bad. I mean, I was in shape. I worked out. I'd run up to 2 hours at a stretch before. I'm thinking, this is going to be a breeze. So I'm walking on that treadmill, but then they pulled a trick on me. That technician cranked the speed up a notch and raised the incline. And every couple of minutes, she would crank it up some more. And before long, what started out as a casual stroll turned into a serious slog. And I am pouring sweat and I'm huffing and puffing and I am saying, man, this thing's going on forever. I feel like I'm about to die. My heart is pounding in my chest. And they finally, out of nowhere, they suddenly stop and say, okay, you're done. I was like, how long was I on that thing? An hour? I said, 13 minutes. Let me tell you, that was the longest 13 minutes of my life. However, that 13 minutes of misery served a very important purpose. The doctors needed to put my heart under stress while they were monitoring it so that they could reveal any potentially dangerous anomalies. Now, I am happy to say the test revealed two things. One, I do indeed have a heart. And two, there were no anomalies. So everything was good. My heart was in good shape. That was a big relief. Although at the time, I didn't know it. Because while that test was going on, I was seriously hurting. It wasn't until after the test was over that the benefit came. Now, over the past couple of weeks, we have been thinking about this question. Why do good people suffer? It's a serious question, one that people have asked for a long, long time. And so far, we've looked at two major ideas that the Bible offers us in helping answer that puzzle. First, we turn to the first couple of chapters of Genesis to see that we experience suffering because we live in a fallen world that has deviated from God's good and perfect design. Suffering exists in a nutshell because the human race collectively has rejected God's authority and we've tried to set ourselves up in His place. And that has not worked out all that well. It's corrupted the very creation itself. And so suffering and death have entered into the picture. And the Bible also tells us God is working to restore that original perfect design. But in the meantime, He has given us Jesus to give us the resources to cope with the pain and suffering in the world and to give us hope that one day, in fact, that suffering will be removed from the equation. And then last week, we looked at the book of Hebrews and we saw that one of the ways that suffering impacts in particular people of faith, people like you and me. And we saw how God actually uses suffering, He takes the suffering we experience and He uses it to teach us and to train us in godliness. Like a good coach, God uses the circumstances of our lives, experiences of suffering, to build our character, to build our faith, to build our endurance. We also saw that like a master craftsman, God uses suffering and pain to chisel away anything in our character that doesn't reflect His image. And when you look at it from that perspective, suffering may not be very pleasant at the time, but the end result is something that is positive and beneficial. It makes us better people. Well, today we're going to look at another way God uses suffering, not just to teach us, but to shape us and to test us to see where we are at in that process of spiritual growth. Now, there are a lot of places in the Bible we can see that being described. In fact, I counted at least 20 different passages in both the Old Testament and the New Testament that talk about God testing His people explicitly. There's probably dozens more that mention it implicitly without actually using the words. But we're going to look at one of those in specific this morning, and we'll pull in a few others to kind of fill in the gaps a little bit. But I'm going to encourage you, if you have a Bible handy, to turn to the fifth book in the Bible, the book of Deuteronomy, specifically chapter 8. Now, for those who aren't familiar with the story, here's the setup. God selected the people of Israel to be the vessel through whom He would work out this plan to redeem and restore creation. And about 3,500 years ago, He miraculously delivered them from slavery in Egypt. As I mentioned, you know, with the Passover celebration, He delivered them from slavery in Egypt under the leadership of a man named Moses to be His people. And He led them to a place called Mount Sinai where He offered them this covenant, kind of like a treaty, if you will. And He said, under this covenant, you will be My people and I will be your God. And He outlined in that covenant the moral and spiritual obligations the people of Israel would take upon themselves, would accept upon themselves by becoming His people, as well as the blessings and the benefits that He would bestow on them if they enter the covenant. And one of the key benefits He offered them was to possess a land of their own, a so-called promised land, in what was then known as the land of Canaan. And so they accepted enthusiastically this covenant with God. And the problems began not too soon after that, because they got to the border of this promised land and they had a crisis of faith. They looked around at some of the challenges that were going to be involved in actually going into that land and claiming it. And they got scared. And so they balked. And they refused to go in. And so God sent them back out into the wilderness to wander around for 40 years until that faithless generation died out and a new generation rose up in their place. And so Deuteronomy is a story of that new generation gathering 40 years later there on the border of the promised land near where their parents had balked, and Moses, who's still leading this large group of people, is reviewing the covenant with them as they prepare to assume that covenant mantle on themselves and enter into the promised land. And in doing so, in chapter 8, Moses reminds the Israelites of what God had done in their parents' generation and how God would continue to work in their midst. But in doing so, Moses laid out some principles that not only applied to the people of ancient Israel, but also to anyone who seeks to walk with God in faith, which includes people like us today. So here it is real simply. For our purposes today, God tests us through our circumstances. In Deuteronomy 8, verse 1, Moses says to them, "All the commandments I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to your forefathers. You shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years, that He might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep His commandments or not." So God absolutely, positively does test His people. Now, we lived in Virginia. We had a friend who worked for the county, and his job was to go out and test utility pipes. And they would take a section of pipe and they would isolate it from the other pipes, and then they would put that isolated section under pressure to check it for leaks. Well, God does something very similar to you and me. He puts us under pressure to check and see if our integrity holds up, to see how much progress we're making towards spiritual maturity. If you really want to see what someone's like, observe them when they're under pressure. Because that's when the real them will come out. And God tests us in different ways. Sometimes He tests us through adversity. In verse 3, "He humbled you and let you be hungry and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that He might make you understand. Man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years." Because, you know, when you're walking through the wilderness for 40 years, that puts wear and tear on your feet. Verse 5, "Thus you are to know in your heart that the Lord your God was disciplining you just as a man disciplines his son." So they spent this 40 years out in the hot, arid wilderness, wandering around, you know, not able to plant crops, not knowing where their next meal is going to come from. But God miraculously provided them the means to feed themselves. God led them to water. God took care of their clothes. Their clothes didn't, you know, you couldn't just go down to Nordstrom's there in the middle of the wilderness. You couldn't go down to Belk and get you a new coat. God miraculously helped their clothing to hold together during that long journey, their shoes to hold together. He sustained them during that. It was tough. It was hard work. Sometimes God uses tough circumstances to see what we're made of. But you know this, God not only uses adversity to test us, sometimes God tests his people through prosperity. You believe that? Verse 6. He says, therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land with brooks of water, of fountains and springs flowing forth in valleys and hills. These people never seen anything like that before. They're used to wandering around the wilderness for 40 years, all their lives. I'm going to bring you into a place that's got plenty of water, he says. A land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land where you will eat food without scarcity, in which you will not lack anything, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you can dig copper. And when you've eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. But beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I command you today. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiply and all that you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud and you'll forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. God says, watch out, because sometimes the biggest test comes through prosperity. A lot of people this weekend were playing the lottery because of the big jackpot. Now, I would never encourage anybody to do that. I think it's a fool's bet. A lot of people today who lost out. But you know, sometimes people do occasionally win. And people, whenever there's a big jackpot, people play because they're hoping winning will solve all their problems. Newsflash. No, it doesn't. It just creates a whole bunch of new problems. There have been actually been some research suggesting that a significant number of people who win the lottery, roughly 10%, depending on which research study you look at, but about 10% of the people that win that big jackpot actually end up bankrupt within a few years. Just like struggling with too little can reveal a lot about a person's true character, so can possessing too much. You forget where you came from. You forget the struggles you've come through. It begins to become too easy. As John Candy's character said in the film Cool Runnings, he's talking about gold medals and people who cheated to get them. He says, listen, if you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it. And it's the same way with money and possessions. If you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it. So God can test us through prosperity as well. God tests us for various reasons. Sometimes he tests us to test our willingness to obey him. He mentions that. Back in verse 2, he might humble you, testing your heart to know whether you will keep his commandments or not. In Exodus chapter 16, verse 4, going back to that first generation, we read, then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. So they're out in the middle of the wilderness. They can't go down to the supermarket to get a loaf of bread. God says, I'm going to rain down bread from the heavens for you. And then he says, and the people will go out and gather a day's portion each day, that I may test them. See, God said, okay, for 6 days, you can come out and you can get enough to eat for just that day. If you try to get more, you try to hoard it, you're going to wake up the next day, it's going to be rotten. He says, on the sixth day, gather twice as much, because only on that day will I allow you to pick up more than you need for the day so that you don't have to pick up any on Sunday, because I'm not going to give you any on Saturday, on the Sabbath day. I want you to take a break. I want you to rest on that day. So on Friday, make sure you gather up twice as much. So Saturday, that'll be enough. But if you try to gather up too much any other day, you'll wake up the next day, and sure enough, they woke up and it was full of worms and it had rotted overnight. Isn't it amazing how God worked that out? But why did he do that? He was testing to see if they would follow his commands, to see if they really would take him at his word. Sometimes God puts tests in our lives, circumstances in our life, to see if we will really stick to his word. In Exodus chapter 20, where God gives them the Ten Commandments. In Exodus 20:20, Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. God has come in order to test you, in order that the fear of him may remain with you so you may not sin. So God tests us to see if we'll obey. But along with that, behind that is another reason God tests us. God tests us to see if we really trust him. Because if we trust him, guess what? We're going to obey him, right? And then he talks about it in verses 3 through 5, about how they struggled, how God provided for them throughout this long ordeal. God has been testing his people this way since the very beginning. The first week we talked about Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden and how God said, I've given you all this abundance. You can eat from anything in this whole beautiful garden except one tree. Stay away from that tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't touch that one. Don't even go near it. So naturally, what do? They go to the tree that they're not supposed to touch. And it's so like us that instead of focusing on the great freedom that God gives us, we always seem to gravitate towards the one thing he says to stay away from. What does that say about us? Huh? What does that say about our hearts? That we always gravitate towards the places where God says, not here. You have everything else, but not there. God was testing them to see if they would trust him. Just they really believe that he was working for their good. The classic case study of this is Genesis chapter 22. In Genesis chapter 22, God calls Abraham, a man he had hand-selected to kind of help carry this redemptive plan forward. He says, Abraham, through you, I'm going to bless the entire world through your offspring. And his offspring became the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel eventually produced Jesus. But he says, Abraham, I'm going to give you a son. Abraham waited all his life to have this son who would be the promise and the one through whom this next generation would come, through whom these promises would be fulfilled. And Abraham was so excited. He waited until he was an old man for this son to be born. And he was so excited to have little Isaac. Isaac's about 14 years old. And God says in Genesis 22, verses 1 and 2, and that came about after these things, God tested Abraham. He said, Abraham. And Abraham said, here I am. He said, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah, and there offer him as a burnt offering. Abraham, the son you've waited all your life for, the one you love so much, the one you're so excited about, I want you to give him up. Abraham immediately faced a test. Do I trust God? And I mean, God, you told me this was going to be the son through whom you were going to bless the world. How are you going to do that if I offer him as a sacrifice? Why are you doing this, God? But to his credit, Abraham trusted God. And he set out to obey God's commands. In fact, it wasn't until the very last minute. He's got Isaac all trussed up, laying on a stack of wood, knife raised, ready to obey this weird, strange command from God. And right as he's about to plunge that knife, God speaks out to him and says, do not stretch out your hand against the lad. Stop, Abraham, no. And then he says, for now I know that you fear God, since you've not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Abraham, this is a test. This is only a test. And then you might think, well, wow, still, what does it say about Abraham that he was willing to actually go through with that? Well, then we get to the New Testament and we find out something that maybe we didn't know when we read the story in Genesis. In Hebrews 11, verses 17 through 19, the writer is writing about that story. He says, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it had been said, "In Isaac your descendants will be called." Get this. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, which he will also receive him back as a type. So why was Abraham even willing to follow through with that? Because he trusted God. He knew that God had some kind of plan. That even if God took his son away, he would somehow give him back. It was trust. Against all other considerations, Abraham trusted God. Another example of this kind of test is Jesus. Remember, before Jesus started his public ministry, he was led out into the wilderness, spent 40 days fasting, and three of the four Gospels record this experience Jesus had in the wilderness where he was tested to see if he would use his abilities as the Son of God in an ungodly way. And it was all a test. He faced three scenarios in which he was given the choice to trust in his Father's provision and plan, or to resort to his own devices to decide things for himself. In Hebrews 4, verse 15, one of my favorite verses, we're told, we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. But we have one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Jesus would face temptation. And yes, those temptations were real. But Jesus passed the test. And because Jesus passed the test, he can help us pass the test. God also uses circumstances to test the steadiness of our character. A lot of times we quote Jeremiah 17:9, which says, "The heart is more deceitful than all else and desperately sick. Who can understand it?" And, you know, and if we're honest, we have to admit, you know, Jeremiah was onto something there. Our hearts can get pretty twisted sometimes. But a lot of times we don't go on to the next verse, which says this, "I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind. Even to give to each man according to his ways, according to the result of his deed." God tests us, puts us under adversity to test us to see what's really in our hearts, who we really are on the inside. In Psalm 26, verses 1 through 3, the psalmist says, "Vindicate me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity. I have trusted in the Lord without wavering. Examine me, Lord. Try me. Test my mind and my heart. For your loving kindness is before my eyes, and I have walked in your truth." There the psalmist is actually saying, God, put me to the test. Show that my integrity is not just make-believe. It's not just a show, but it's the real thing. How do we show that our integrity is for real? It has to be tested. It's pretty easy to do the right thing when everybody's watching you, right? And you're putting on a show, but you know, they always say real integrity is what you do when nobody's looking. You know who you really are when that comes out? God tests us to see what's really in us. But here's something to always remember. For whatever reason God may be testing us, God always tests us for our good. In verse 16, back in Deuteronomy chapter 8, he says, "In the wilderness he fed you manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do good for you in the end." So even though the test, like when I was going through that stress test, it was miserable, it was hard, it was painful, it was unpleasant, but at the end, it brought about a positive result. It showed that, hey, everything was going on. Trust me, if you've ever had a doctor mention say that, hey, we need to check your heart skips a beat when they say that, okay? If you've never been through that, just trust me, let me tell you. The doctor says, we need to check your heart, that's when it gets real. And so to go through that test and the doctor say, okay, your heart's good. That was a relief. A good thing came out of that misery. Well, God, sometimes the tests are hard, but God does them to bring about a good result. Also in verse 18, "You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you the power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is to this day. It shall come about that if you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods to serve them and worship them, I will testify against you today that you will surely perish, like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you. So you shall perish because you would not listen to the voice of the Lord your God." God was using their adversity and their struggles to bring about a good result in them, to keep them from going down the wrong path that so many of these other nations had gone down. So God does things for our good. God's tests are motivated by a desire to prosper and preserve us. To prosper and preserve us. That's why James can say in the New Testament, in James 1 verse 13, that God doesn't tempt us, okay? Yeah, sometimes our tests may involve something that's in our path that tempts us to get off the path, but God is not tempting us. As James says, "Let no one say when he's tempted, I'm being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one's tempted when he's carried away and enticed by his own lust." So God doesn't tempt us because the goal of temptation is to set somebody up to fail. Temptation is to make you fail. God never sets out to make you fail. God's motivation in testing us is to help us succeed. He wants to bring about the good result in us. God tests us, first of all, to improve us. In Isaiah 48, verse 10, the Lord says, "Behold, I have refined you, but not as silver. I have tested you in the furnace of affliction." If you ever watch metal being processed, you know, they heat the metal up, the impurities float to the top, and they skim off those impurities, and what's left behind is more pure and stronger and more valuable. The same thing happens in our lives. That testing causes the impurities to rise to the top so they can be dealt with. In James 1, verses 2 and 3, passages you saw up on the screen a little while ago, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing the testing of your faith produces endurance." So God tests us to improve us. God also tests us to approve us. In Matthew 13, verses 20 and 21, Jesus said, the one on whom the seed was sown on the rocky places, he's sharing this parable about somebody going out and sharing the word of God, sharing the gospel, and he describes it like a guy going out throwing seeds around. He describes different types of soil the seed lands in. And he says, the one on whom the seed was sown on the rocky places, this is the man who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy, yet he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. And when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he falls away. And his point was there, it's when the adversity comes, when the hard times come, that's when you find out how rooted you are. Because if your faith is only skin deep, it's going to be shown to be fake through the adversity. The strongest trees tend to have the deepest roots. And it's through the way we handle adversity and challenge that we show whether our faith is genuine, whether it's the real deal. In 1 Peter 1, verses 6 and 7, Peter writes, in this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold which is perishable, even though tested by fire, anybody been through the fire lately? May be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. God wants to demonstrate that you are the real deal, that your faith is genuine. Sometimes the best way to do that is to watch how we respond under trial. A few years ago, the Marine Corps had a question. They wanted to make sure that the recruits they were turning out were ready to fight. So they came up with something called the Crucible. And the Crucible is a 2.5-day exercise where the recruits are constantly put in a series of tests under conditions that are intended to simulate the stress of combat, to see if they can hold together and push through and to reach their objectives under those conditions to show they are worthy of the title of Marine. Well, there's a story in the Bible about a young man named Jacob, who's the grandson of Abraham. And as a young man, Jacob could lie, cheat, and manipulate with the best of them. In fact, his name means the trickster. And that's how he tended to get ahead. It's by tricking people. However, God had his hand on this man's life. And God used a series of difficult circumstances to break Jacob of those terrible habits and to remake him into a man of faith. And there was one final test that remained. Jacob was leading his family back to Canaan, the place he grew up in. And when they got to the river that marked the boundary of that promised land, he sent the family on ahead. He says, I'm going to stay here tonight. It's one last night. He camped out there by himself on the banks of that river. And that night, he was attacked by a mysterious stranger. Jacob spent the whole night wrestling with this guy. And the Bible describes this intense wrestling match. Nobody could get an advantage. They're locked in mortal combat. And finally at dawn, the stranger struck a blow that nearly dislocated Jacob's hip. And that ended the match. But it was then that Jacob realized something. I have not spent the night wrestling with a mortal human being. I have been wrestling with a manifestation of God himself. And that experience may have left Jacob with a limp, but he also got a new name out of it. No longer was Jacob known as the trickster. Before disappearing, God bestowed on him the name Israel, which means the man who perseveres with the Lord. He had gone through the crucible and come out the other side. So as you wrestle with hard times, remember, these difficulties may be God's way of seeing what you are really made of and whether you are really, truly trusting in Him. So hang on. Stay in the struggle. For as James 1:12 tells us, blessed is the man who perseveres under trial. For when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love Him. Stand firm till you pass the test.
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautix.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thank you for listening.